Welcome to the Occult London Podcast. This is a new podcast dedicated to exploring magic, mysticism, and Kabbalah, as well as other topics of interest. This is the fifth episode of a series exploring different concepts in relation to the Kabbalistic Tree of Life from a Western mystery perspective. I'm your host, Will, and I'll be guiding you on this journey through the different ideas and concepts. I'm not pretending to be an expert or anything like that. This is a learning thing for me, and I hope that you have been finding the episodes up until recently interesting, and hopefully you're learning and getting some insights from them. This fifth episode, we are going to be looking at the Sephira of Bina, which is obviously the archetypal feminine. And to begin with, I wanted to kind of obviously run through some of the correspondences that traditionally associated with this Sephira. So the title of Bina is Understanding. The name of God is Yehovah Elohim, or Tetragrammaton Elohim. The archangel is Safkiel, or Contemplation of God. The angelic hosts are the Aralim, which means valiant ones. The astrological correspondences is Shabbatai, which is Saturn. The tarot correspondences are the four threes and the four queens of the pack, and the elemental correspondence is water. The path text for this particular Sephira is as follows. The third path is the sanctifying intelligence, and it is the foundation of primordial wisdom. It is called the creator of faith, and its roots are in Amen. It is the parent of faith, and from its virtues, faith emanates. The magical image of this particular Sephira is an old woman with long white hair, wearing a simple black robe, carrying a rough wooden staff, and she is facing towards the viewer's right. Additional symbols are would include anything like the vaginal symbols, or the sea, or the ocean, things like that. So things associated with femininity. Additional titles would be Amma, which is the dark, sterile mother, and Aima, which is the bright, fertile mother. And there's also Mara, which is the great sea. The colours of this particular Sephira in Atzeluth is crimson, in Bria would be black, in Yetzirah would be dark brown, and in Isaiah is grey flecked with pink. The correspondence in the microcosm would be Neshama, which is the spiritual understanding, and the correspondence in the body is the right side of the head. The grade of initiation is 8 equals 3, which corresponds to the Magister Templi, and that's really the kind of the main aspects of this particular Sephira. So Bina is obviously the third Sephira in the descent of consciousness from Keter, and has the title of understanding. So, you know, just as Chokhmah, which we discussed last week, is the masculine symbol, as the phallus, the lion, and the yo, when we look at Bina, the yoni is important. Bina is the third Sephira, and so forms the sort of triangle of manifestation. And so this is really the birthplace of the beginnings of form. Bina is the third Sephira. And a useful kind of quote from this point of view would be as follows. A useful analogy of the creative process represented by the uppermost Sephiroth of the tree, the supernal triad, is that of water flowing from a tap. The source of the water is Keter, whilst the pouring stream is Chokhmah's aspect of the system. If one cups one's hands into the water and places them in the path of the water, this represents Bina. So this is really kind of the womb into which the star force and the seed of Chokhmah is planted, and it really provides the forces of construction and the beginnings of form, but at the same time also the destruction and a death of sorts from force into the beginnings of form. So we can actually say that Bina has sort of twin aspects of a light side and a dark side, and these are represented in the Kabbalah in Amma, which is the dark, destructive mother, and Aima, the bright, fertile mother. Gareth Knight explains this really well in his Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, which I'd recommend people read if they haven't had a chance to, as follows. In order for there to be any development, there must be some limitation or positive action. Pure virgin spirit has no or very few distinguishing characteristics from other sparks of first manifest spirits. Capacity for individualized action is gained by the entry into the limiting factors of form. Firstly, the relative high degree of freedom of the spiritual levels, and then the more limited freedom of mentation. Then even greater limitations which the emotional levels impose, and finally the extreme limitation, physical existence. Dionne Fortune also goes into this as well in her Mystical Kabbalah, when she says, Bina, the Great Mother, sometimes also called Mara, the Great Sea, is of course the mother of all living. She is the archetypal womb through which life comes into manifestation. Whatsoever provides a form to serve life as a vehicle is of her. It must be remembered, however, that life confined in a form, although it is enabled thereby to organise and so evolved, is much less free than it was when it was very unlimited, although also unorganised on its own plane. Involvement in a form is therefore the beginnings of the life of death. It is a straightening and limiting, a binding and a constricting. Form checks life, thwarts it, and yet enables it to organise. Seen from the point of view of free-moving force, incarceration in a form is extinction. Form disciplines force with a merciless severity. So this is the idea of the free-flowing power of Keter and Chokhmah is beginning to come into the first ideas of form within Bina. But at this stage, it's still archetypal, so it's not actually physical form as we know it. We can see this in the spelling of Bina in Hebrew, however. So if we look at the spelling, it's the letter Beth, which is the universe is contained, the universal will is contained. Yo, which creates the sort of principle existence. Nun, which is passing through the 50 gates of understanding. And then He, which is manifestation. So this is really the, you know, sort of template and the source of all forms. So the mother, and another title of it is the City of Pyramids, or the Queen of Heaven. Other forms associated with Bina would be the Shekinah, which is the indwelling presence of God, the Babylon as well, and also the Catholic Litany of the Blessed Virgin. So there's lots of different titles that they use in the Catholic Church, such as Mare of the Sea, Mother of Christ, Mother of Divine Grace, Mother Inviolate. And symbols for this state are things like the lattice or the net, or anything to do with organisation, really. The vision of this particular sphere, as we've mentioned before, is the vision of sorrow. And this can also be equated to the Buddhist view of everything is sorrow. However, Will Parfit, who's one of my favourite authors, says the following instead of this. Kabbalists tend to believe that the vision of duality below the abyss is not sorrowful, for the division created is intentional, to allow the divided parts the opportunity to know themselves through union or love. And this is described by Crowley in the Book of the Law as divided for love's sake, for the chance of union. So this is essentially talking about, kind of attainment through a balanced connection between Bina and Chokhmah, which again would equate to spiritual love and also spiritual will. One of the symbols of Bina, which is very relevant, is the magical cup. So if we imagine it as being, you know, almost like a womb to contain that primal essence that's coming out of Chokhmah. And this could also equate to magical cup or a chalice. And one of the legends about Bina is that it's said that an adept who crosses the abyss must drain every drop of his blood. And this is very much representative of the requirement. If one wishes to cross the abyss, then you must give up everything that is separate and exists beneath the abyss. So the blood here could really be representative of the ego that needs to be relinquished before being reborn. Will Parfit, who we've mentioned before in his Living Kabbalah book, talks about this when he says the following. The adept who achieves this crossing is said to be in the City of Pyramids, each pyramid representing the remains of a successful adept. There is a rebirth into spirit, and the adept, now called the master of the temple, is sometimes symbolically represented as a gardener whose sole purpose is the tending of the garden in his or her care. This garden is all the connections with the world the master of the temple has left behind only in order that it may be found again in a new transformed light. And this is really well represented in the in one of the episodes, Twin Peaks, if anyone's seen it, where it looks at the disappearance of Briggs. So there's actually three logs burning on the fire before his disappearance. And then we also see sort of three triangles that come spinning out of the night sky and are burnt into his skin behind his ear. And, you know, obviously the triangle is very relevant to ceremonial magic, but also very closely related to Beenar. So this is the kind of spiritual awareness and love, and love is obviously opening that way to let the White Lodge in case of Twin Peaks. Moving on to the gods and goddesses of Beenar. So as we can see, when we're dealing with the archetypal feminine, we've got a lot of different strong feminine goddesses associated with this sphere. So these would include Isis, Demeter, Hecate, and also some aspects of the lunar spheres. One of my favourite feminine figures of Beenar, for me, again, going back to the Grail legends, is the Grail heroine, Dindrain. So from these stories, the Grail itself is a very mysterious object that's meant to have kind of held the blood of Christ from the crucifixion. However, there's also, you know, quite a lot of history behind this with regards to the Grail equating with the Cauldron of Bran, and also having magical properties such as being able to heal the land and provide everlasting life, for instance, in the depiction of in Indiana Jones, when he takes his father, who's very ill, to find the Grail, and it's meant to cure his father. The quest for the Grail can also be seen as a quest for the divine feminine, or the search for the goddess. The story of Dindrain is quite interesting in this regard, because when she's quite young, she is meant to go into a convent, but has a vision of Christ, and so sets out on a quest to find her brother, who is Parsifal. Dindrain travels away from her home and meets Parsifal, where she tells Parsifal about numerous magical objects, including the Sword of the Strange Belt, the magical ship of Solomon, and other things as well. So she finds Parsifal staying at a castle of a strange queen who has a mysterious illness that can only be healed by drinking a cup of blood from a virgin. She agrees to do it, but unfortunately dies as a result of the blood loss. So she is put aboard a boat with three masts and sets sail to Saras, the land of the blessed. So in this story we can see that, you know, Dindrain is meant to have achieved the Grail through her sacrifice, and also helps Galahad, Parsifal and Bors achieve their goal. So Dindrain very much acts as a female initiator into the mysteries of the Grail within this particular regard, through giving of blood and kind of finding true compassion, love and understanding. And thus the union of the male and the female really sort of occurs from that point of view. This is quite well talked about in the Zohar when it says the following: prior to its entering into this world, consists of a male and female united into one being. When it descends on this earth, the two parts separate and animate into two different bodies. At the time of marriage, the Holy One, blessed be He, who knows all souls and spirits, unites them again as they were before, and they again constitute one body and one soul, forming as it were the right and left of one individual. This union, however, is influenced by the deeds of the man and by the ways in which he walks. If the man is pure and his conduct is pleasing in the sight of God, he is united with that female part of his soul, which was his component part prior to his birth. So what we can see from this is very much this represents that pure feminine understanding aspect that lies within every one of us. Likewise, obviously, there's the pure masculine force that lies in each one of us as well. So it's about uniting those different aspects of oneself to find union with that divine. Another film that I thought was quite relevant to Beenar, which I wanted to kind of finish this episode with, is The Neverending Story. So quite an old film from the 80s. And in this film, the Empress is represented as being kind of this fertility and femininity, and the giver of life to the realm, which is obviously relevant to the tarot card of the Empress. But obviously there is this big, great, big plague that comes down onto the land. There is a hero, Atreyu, who begins his quest to save the Empress, who is fallen ill. So the queen is actually ill because the land is ill. And the boy goes through lots of different adventures and struggles, but then towards the end, he arrives at the Empress's castle and thinks that he's failed in his quest, essentially. But she tells him that he did succeed through getting one human soul to believe in Fantasia. And then Bastian, who his counterpart on the outside, obviously has to find a new name for the land, and it's all healed again. So this is very much a story about a kind of grail quest for that divine feminine that's represented by the Empress. And there's a particularly poignant part at the end of the film where it's pure darkness, which is then brought to life from a single grain of sand. And from this point of view, Bastian could be seen as Hokma breathing life into the darkness of Bina, which is also symbolized by the relationship of the Tetragrammaton, so the Yo being Hokma and the He being Bina. But anyway, that's a film that's worth watching if anybody's interested. So I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. We'll be doing the next one next week, which will be looking at the Invisible Sephira, which is Dart. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we will speak to you soon. Thanks. Bye.